to truly believe in the magic.
Welcome to Let's Talk Magic. I'm Mikey, and for the first time in 9 weeks, the Dream Team are finally back together.
First time in forever.
Carry on, I want more.
Mate, no, that's as much as frozen as you're getting from me. feel like it's forever, mate.
It does feel like forever. I know, before Christmas since I've been on, you guys have been holding down the fort for me. But we're going to get into that very shortly. On today's episode, we're going to recap NBA All-Star Weekend that featured our very own Paolo Banchero, our thoughts on Shaquille O'Neal's jersey retirement, and we look ahead to the final stretch of the season as the Magic make their push for the NBA playoffs. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. Gary, Geraint, Paul and me are four huge Orlando Magic fans from the UK, and we co-host this weekly podcast called Let's Talk Magic. We were previously Orlando Magic UK. Between the four of us, we've been over to Orlando for over 100 games between us. Geraint's just returned from a trip. We were all over last season for a number of games as well. Over the last few years, we've had some incredible guests on that include Magic CEO Alex Martins, Nick Anderson, Daryl Armstrong, Brian Hill, and PA announcer Paul Porter, just to name a few. So if you're interested in a unique British perspective on the Magic, then make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss any future episodes. So before we dive into the show, guys, it's great to be back. I've been away for a little while with a few projects of mine I've been working on. So if you're pleased to see the back of me, I'm sorry, I'm back. but I'm back, yeah. You couldn't get rid of me that easily. Helping man the fort is Paul. How are things with you, my friend?
All right, matey. Bit tired, but yeah, all good. All good, mate. Thank you very much. Good to have us all back together.
Absolutely. And Gary, how's things in Sunderland?
Good to see you, Mikey. I'm just admiring your all-star jersey there, which will be Paolo, of course. It's not Scotty Barnes, is it?
It's definitely not Scotty Barnes. It's definitely not Scotty Barnes. But yeah, I'm doing well, mate. Thank you. And Geraint, how was your trip to Orlando? 3-1. And you had a surprise of your life on one of them. So tell us about your trip, mate.
I did. So yeah, I got back on Saturday. Good. So it's good to be back and see the wife and the kids, but obviously missing Magic basketball. But obviously there's no games this week, so good time to come back. Already looking into booking for next year. So I think it's about 610 days to go. So not that I'm counting. So no, in fairness, superb trip. Obviously, I went over with Neil Piper, shout him out. Met a lot of great people, met a lot from the UK community. And yeah, like you said, I had the surprise of my life last Tuesday on the same night that Shaquille O'Neal got his jersey retired. I'd had an email from somebody at the Magic and said, you know, can you meet me? And of course said, yeah, no problems. Got into the Fields Ultimate Lounge, which was absolutely brilliant. And I thought that was the, you know, end of the surprise. And then all of a sudden, he said, all right, 6:15, I need to go somewhere. We get up, we walk towards the court. I don't know what's going to happen. And then Markelle Fultz is there, the other side of the basket, you know, handshakes and fist bumps and you know, he appreciates the love that, you know, that we give him, the support and everything. And he presented me with one of his jerseys and signed it, personalized to me. So we had a couple of photos and it was all over in like, you know, 30 seconds. So it happened so quickly. Because a lot of you guys have said, why are you asking to come on the pod? I just didn't think. You know, it just happened so quickly. So it was absolute privilege to meet him. You know, really, really good dude. They say don't meet your heroes, but you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting Markelle and Nick Anderson now, and they've both been absolutely brilliant. So yeah, you know, that actually, you know, that made my trip. I won't lie. Meeting Markelle, getting 3-1 record. Got a Tampa Bay Lightning win and then Orlando Solar Bear win. So, 5-1, I'll chalk it up to. But brilliant it was.
You were a little starstruck.
I was a little starstruck, yes, I was. I was. I just didn't know what was going to happen. And then, you know, it just blindsides you, really. So, yeah, I'd just like to thank whoever at the Magic organized that, because it was a hell of a shock and a surprise, a really nice one. So thank you from the bottom of my heart, you know, for organizing it, whoever you are.
Fair play. Fair play.
Yeah.
Okay, right, let's get into All-Star Weekend then. So this past weekend, Paolo Banchero appeared in his first NBA All-Star game representing the Orlando Magic. Friday night, he played for Team Tamika in the Rising Stars Challenge, losing to Team Jalen 40-35, who went on to win in the final. So, Paul, what were your thoughts first on the format, having a target score of 40 and then 25 in the final? Do you think this is maybe a better format that maybe they should carry over to the All-Star game?
I feel like you take my legs every year when it comes to All-Star. You always ask me about these target scores, and you know I hate them. So we start the pod off every time with me on a negative, going, no, I don't like it. I don't. Can't help it. I don't like target scores. I still think it's just... I just don't like it. I prefer a set. I prefer the time and everybody playing to that time. And the thing I especially don't like in the Rising Stars one is the 25 points
for the final.
I just think if you're supposed to be seeing the best two teams now, why are you giving them so short a period? I'm not a fan of that format. I like the format of two teams in a knockout final, then great. But I don't like the target score. Rising Stars, I was actually a little surprised at it this year. I felt it was a lot less competitive. I'm quite surprised. Normally, the guys really seem to go for it. It seemed to be a little bit of taking it easy.
Mm.
I think Paolo felt... There was one point where he looked around. You could see him look around as if to say, well, are any of you actually going to try to play a little bit of defence or make an effort at getting back? Because he was running up and down. I was surprised because it is a chance for some of these guys to show themselves on an international stage. We all know that there are certain teams that hog the media attention. So like Paolo, this is one of the few opportunities that he gets to play on a national and international stage. And I thought one or two of them let themselves down in the actual amount of effort that they put in. Not at all surprised to see the G League guys do well, for that same reason, that it's a platform for them. They came out and really gave it a go. I was happy to see them. And if you're asking me about the format, I'd like to see it change.
How would you change it?
I've given it some thought on that one, and I would like to see six division teams. So you have Miami, Atlanta, Charlotte, Washington, and the Magic as one team from the division, and you play each of your other Eastern Conference division teams in two shortened games, be it to a score or be it a 6 or 10 minute game. And the same goes for the West, and the winner of the East plays the winner of the West. You probably get to see more teams involved, so you don't just have that exposure for the teams that are always in there. I know you do get a lot of spread with the Rising Stars game, but I think you actually have more interest in other teams being involved. Everybody gets some representation that way. And yes, you perhaps introduce a bit of excitement in that you've got a knockout competition and then East versus West at the end of it.
So you take, two players from each team?
Something of that nature, yeah.
So if it's the Magic, say throw your rookies in there, like Jet Howard, Anthony Black or somebody. I quite like that idea. Guys, anything else to add from what Paul said?
Not really, no. On that particular event, we'll get onto the other events in a second.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Saturday evening then, So, Paul and Paul, I promise I didn't throw that at you on purpose.
Liar.
I swear, honestly. I promise. My memory is not that good to remember from this time last year.
You know that the only part I enjoy of All-Star is Saturday night.
Yeah. Well, I'll get to that.
Don't worry, mate. It's all right. It's all good. It's good actually to have that. Let's not look at it. I'm not looking at it as just a complete fan of it. I'm looking at it as, let's try and be objective about it.
I'm just
not a fan of target scores.
I'm with you. Saturday night is the only part I was really interested in. I'm with you, but we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah, go for it.
So Paolo was part of the first picks team in the Skills Challenge alongside Victor Wembanyama and Anthony Edwards. They didn't do very well, but it didn't really help by Banchero's mistake at the start of the first challenge. We saw Damian Lillard go back-to-back winning the three-point shooting challenge, and the Osceola Magic guard, Mac McClung, won his second NBA dunk contest in a row too. So, G, I know we all share the same disappointment that Paolo probably didn't do as well as he probably wanted to do, but what were your thoughts on the skill challenge and Saturday night overall? Honestly, you even had a chance to watch it properly?
I've had a chance to watch it now. I was disappointed. Overall, the weekend, I think, has been a big disappointment. Lack of effort, in part, from a lot of players. And we can start with the skills challenge. You know, you've got, you know, players shooting left-handed.
That's with really Anthony Edwards.
You know, that's, it's not competing. It's not trying your hardest. There were shots being shot, behind your back from half court. What's all that about?
Was there a certain player who plays for the Toronto Raptors that was shooting left hand?
No, it was Anthony Edwards. In Paolo's team, in the number one picks team, which that was the first competition part, which is why they didn't get anywhere near.
No, Scotty Barnes did do it when they were trying to go for the half court heave in. When they had the tiebreaker.
Oh, right. I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Anyway, carry on, G. Sorry.
He ran into the stands, didn't he, Scotty Barnes?
It's just disrespectful, you know, to the competition and the invite that you've been, you know, invited to participate in front of all those players, people, audience, you know, the world. And you're shooting left-handed. You want to go out and try and win it. And I think Paolo said at the beginning, you know, he wanted to go out and try his hardest. Obviously, the team didn't win, and it is what it is. But I think it's lost a bit of its edge. You know, back in the day, you had people like Chris Paul, you know, playing and really trying to win that event. Steve Nash, another one. So that particular event was disappointing. The one event that I did think was the best event was the Steph Curry against Sabrina Ionescu. Yeah. It went down to the wire, you know, and it was a great, you know, event showcasing, you know, the talents of Sabrina and the WNBA and for, you know, basketball in general. So I'd like to see that come back. You could even, you know, make the field a bit bigger, like what I think Steph was alluding to, you know, him and Clay teaming up against Sabrina and the other lady that's, you know, broken a record last week. Her name escapes me at the moment.
Caitlin Clark.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one. Mikey's cousin. the other event then, the slam dunk. The reason I didn't enjoy the slam dunk competition, I liked the Mac McClung win it, but the scores from the judges were all over the place for me. Mm-hmm. They were really pushing Jaylen Brown to get to the final, and I didn't think much of his dunks. You know, okay, I'm probably wearing my magic tinted glasses, but I thought the other two participants did better than what Jaylen Brown did. You got a good field there. Gary Payton, Fred Jones, Mitch Richmond, Dominique Wilkins. Darnell Hillman, I did have to Google who he was, but he was known as Dr. Dunk, and he played for the Indiana Pacers, Denver Nuggets, New Jersey Nets, and Golden State Warriors. So he's obviously, the home judge, so to speak. So I was a little bit perplexed at some of those scores. It was good to see Mac win, though. I did think he had the best dunks, but I did think he should have scored higher on some of his others. Mm-hmm. I did watch it with Amy on Sunday, and I was, you know, just trying to work out how much Mac needed. And some of the scores just didn't make much sense. So overall, really, it was a bit, I don't know, sorry, the three-point competition. Three-point competition is always a good event. You know, the participants are in there to shoot. They're not in there to shoot left-handed and, you know, make a mockery of it. They want to win it. Some, you know, really good performances, Carl Anthony Towns, Trey Young, Damian Lillard. And the fact that people scored 24, 25 in round one and got eliminated speaks to, you know, the standard of the quality there of the shooters. So, no, all in all, some of it was good, some of it was bad, but you just want to see a bit more effort for me.
Gary, you got anything to add?
I think with the dunk contest was traditionally the thing you got excited about the most in like previous years with the All-Star game. And I think we've just reached that point where there's not a lot else left genetically that people can do clean. So I think we've seen, you know, like if you were to take it back to old dunk contests and look at what, when Jordan was in it even, and, you know, Dominique Wilkins, and what's being done now is a step above. And from a personal standpoint, the Aaron Gordon debacle kind of lessened my interest in the dunk contest since then. But if you were to take what the dunkers have done in recent years and put them against the famous dunks, they actually are more talented and creative dunkers now than they were, in my opinion, than they were in the 80s and in the 90s. But we've reached a point of where it's really hard to wow people. You know, like I think like Aaron Gordon going over Taco Fall, I think Mac McClung going over Shaq, there isn't much more you can do from there without really turning it into like an elaborate over-the-top Cirque du Soleil style performance. There isn't much left. So I think unless you get somebody who's built like Muggsy Bogues doing what Mac McClung did, it's kind of always going to be, well, it's going to flatten out.
Yeah.
So I've seen it on Twitter where someone said maybe the dunk contest should be a once in every 4 years thing if they're going to do it. Now, maybe, but the other option was when they offered the $1 million each to Kobe, T-Mac, Vince Carter and LeBron, and nobody wanted to be the loser. So I think we're at a point where it's kind of like the dunk contest, it's what your expectation is. And there isn't clean-wise a lot that people can do beyond, I think, with the human body than what's already been done. And it's fair play because we've seen some tremendous dunks.
Yeah.
But I think we're at the limit now.
Do you think we were spoiled back in, you know, when Aaron Gordon was against Zach LaVine and they were hitting everything first time? Yeah.
That was incredible, that dunk contest.
Yeah.
That was incredible. I mean, I don't know if I was misunderstanding Reggie Miller. And I think he was perhaps not articulating the point well. But where he was saying that, about basically saying that G Leaguers have no place in the dunk contest. If you haven't got people that are willing to step up and you want to have it, then you've got to have somebody filling in that role. I guess that Mac McClung is perhaps the argument that he is a pure G Leaguer as opposed to on a two-way contract. But hey, the lad turned up and he had every right to defend his title, in my opinion, and he did a cracking job. As to what you're saying, Gary, I quite agree with. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're going to keep expecting somebody to come up with something new, it's, you're never going to get anybody willing to step up and take part in the contest. I don't see the problem in actually just showcasing great dunking talent, just going in and doing your traditional dunks that you would have seen in the 80s and 90s competitions, rather than it having to be inventive and showmanship. Just put on a damn good dunk contest and let's see some bigger names involved. If you can get 8-9 names involved for a three-point contest, surely you can find 4 bigger names who are willing to put themselves in a dunk contest without having to come up with, let's reinvent the wheel. Just turn up and let's recreate it as this year's theme is classic dunks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to shout out Jaylen Brown for actually
absolutely,
you know,
mate,
being a star and actually, you know, participating because you see everybody shy away from it. Don't want to be, you know, showed up by, you know, G leaguers or rookies. So Jaylen Brown, fair play to him, you know, actually participating.
But then I also think guys like Mac McClung should be given that shot to do it because A, they're clearly very good dungers, and B, it's their passport maybe to getting in the league and getting some type of better outcomes for themselves. Like pre-G League days, Harold Miner was on posters in basketball magazines and in commercials, and he did nothing really as a career. He was being hyped as Baby Jordan because of how he looked and how good a dunker he was. And that was Harold Miner's probably giving him a comfortable living, and fair play to him for that. You know, if that's your niche that you've got to carve out and make yourself a millionaire, do it, you know, like give them the chance, because these guys who I guess could be great dunkers, and they don't want to do it probably because they don't want to lose.
Yeah,
I would guess. And fair play to guys like Dwight Howard in previous years, big names who put themselves up there, like Jaylen Brown.
It's hard to change it, really, isn't it? I mean, if they were to go away from it, I mean, would a one-on-one competition be more exciting to watch than a dunk competition? Because it's something other people have brought up before about maybe adding that in somewhere during the weekend. But I don't see that being massively competitive. If nothing else is during the weekend, then I don't know.
You need obviously like a game of horse or something like that.
Yeah.
Because then that way nobody gets injured.
How many millions of people are going to tune in to watch, I don't know, two players go and play horse against one another? It wouldn't get my attention, that's for sure.
It won't happen. I don't think it'll happen, because I don't think, like, let's take it at its absolute apex and say Kobe, T-Mac, Vince Carter, LeBron, four most skilled players in the league all round.
Mm-hmm.
Their reputation, that whole debate then goes out the window when one of them wins. And then you're going to have sponsors as well saying, we don't want you to do that because we want to say we've got the best guy. And then, you know, Adidas would probably be pulling on T-Mac. Nike are going to be pulling on LeBron or on... I don't think it'll happen, just for too many reasons. Too much for them to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what used to be the highlight of NBA All-Star Weekend for many was the All-Star Game itself. And I think it's becoming... Well, it is a trend now. It's not at all. The Ace come out on top and won 211 to 186, the highest points total in All-Star Game history. The NBA made the decision to return back to the original format, East versus West. They've done away with the draft lottery or the lottery, not the lottery, the draft itself of picking the All-Stars. We had LeBron versus KD and they picked teams. To be honest, that was more of a highlight, like a couple of years ago when everybody wouldn't pick James Harden and left him to the last. Like that was more exciting to watch and entertaining than watching the game itself. But anyway, they've done away with the Elam ending as well. Gary, I don't know what they're going to do to fix the All-Star game. I don't think they can, as we just kind of spoke about. What do you think the NBA do from here? Do we just keep it as is?
I think when we were going into the All-Star weekend, the only thing that was on my mind is please, Paolo, don't get injured. That was my whole thing. I'm not a huge fan of the All-Star game beyond the idea if I was a player and competitive in the league, I'd want to be able to say, like Steph Curry, I've got 10 All-Star selections, because it's recognition of how good you are. But nobody wants to get injured. And all you've got to do is watch the game when they're kind of like letting somebody ghost by them to do a move and throwing up like the circus shots and stuff like that. And I think from my angle, if Paolo wasn't involved, I didn't even watch last year's All-Star game because I was like, I don't care. I'm not bothered. I just want to see what Paolo does. I think with the current format, the only way I would be really into All-Star Weekend is if they did an All-Star Weekend in London. or in the UK somewhere where we could attend and we could see all of these events in person and do the fan festivals. And I think if you were in Orlando and you had a chance at that, the weekend itself would be unreal as a person who was there for it live. But I think when you're not that person and you haven't got it in your city, it's kind of a bit like, I'm watching the Harlem Globetrotters here just with bigger names. That's kind of what it feels like. And I think it was the Napier Foundation, who's one of the on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, said, do you attach home court advantage in the finals to the, and I think that's probably the only way you can do it, because throwing money at it, I don't think it's going to matter. Players do not want to get injured, but have some level of competitiveness where it means something. That's probably it. Home court. And then you've got to look at it and see, even then, would it solve it? If you've got a player like Trae Young, who the Hawks touch and go type of thing, are they going to go all out when it doesn't benefit them? But overall, it's your stars on your playoff teams. That's the only way I can see it actually meaning something, and also the meaning something to the coaches.
Yeah.
Scotty Barnes will still be lobbing it from half court, mate.
He's, do you know what I really like seeing, mate, is when Paolo and Scotty were like together, because you have all this meltdown about it, and it's just it's beef between probably 1% of the fan base.
They just don't care, do they? They just get on.
Why would they care? You know, you've got two guys who, you know, but it was funny to see that picture, because I thought these guys don't get, they clearly like respect each other at the very least.
Yeah,
but overall, that's the only way you're going to get anything out of it. If you attach, like was suggested by the Napier Foundation, you attach the home court advantage.
Anybody else feel that Paolo's performance in the All-Star game kind of showed what is a huge strength of his as far as our team are concerned, but at times, something I'd like to see him resist a little bit. And that's how generous he is to make others better, his willingness to pass. There were rarely did he actually drive at the basket. Most times he looked and saw Dame out on the wing and passed the ball because there was the clear shot. Whereas you looked at somebody like Scotty Barnes, and this is no criticism of him. You're in an All-Star game, go and get your props. And he would just drive and dunk. Or he would shoot. Paolo did an awful lot of passing. And at times I do want to see him be a little bit more selfish for us. Whilst we haven't got shooters around him. If we can put some of them shooters around him that were in that game, I'm good with him passing.
Just one of them.
Just one.
Yeah, just one. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, let's not lie. If the highlights of that game were some of the 3-point shooting, which was incredibly accurate, yeah, regardless of it not being challenged, but where Dame and Halliburton were shooting from, there were some incredible shots that those two particularly put up. And by the way, that was a foul by Steph on Paolo. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a steal, it wasn't a block, it was a foul. He got all hand. Not a ball.
Who would you have given the MVP to, out of interest?
Yeah. For leading the points, I think you've got to go Dame.
I thought Halliburton should have had it myself.
He was close.
He went off. Yeah, yeah, it was very close.
Between the two, but I think I'd have probably given it Dame.
I think the thing that summed up the weekend, the game itself, does it? We all see Adam Silver's interview on the court after the game.
I didn't actually.
Have you not?
What? No,
not happy.
He basically turned around and he said, "Well, congratulations to the Eastern Conference All Stars. You scored the most amount of points," and just left it at that. Didn't say anything else.
Okay.
It was somebody who was displeased with what he saw. Yeah, it was. It definitely was. But anyway. That's enough about All-Star. Let's take a quick break to tell you about our partners, Attraction Tickets. So if you're looking for tickets and hotels for the world's best theme parks and attractions, then check out Attraction Tickets. They are the UK's number one attraction ticket provider for Walt Disney World, Universal Studios, SeaWorld, Disneyland Paris, and other popular attractions. They also sell Orlando Magic tickets at hugely competitive prices. So when you're booking your next holiday, use our link in the description and see what they have to offer. You can also visit our website, letstalkmagic.com, for all of our affiliate links and discount codes, including the NBA store and Fanatics. So on to the next section, Shaq's jersey retirement. G, you were at Kia Center last Tuesday for our nationally televised TNT game against OKC Thunder. I don't want to talk about the game. I've already erased that from my memory because it wasn't a pleasant viewing experience. But on the same night, the Magic honored number 32, Shaquille O'Neal, becoming the first player in Magic history to have his jersey retired and put into the rafters. You were there for the ceremony. So tell us what it was like. How great was it for you? I know you probably disagree on him being the first player to go up there, but
We'll get to that in a second. But first of all, you know, that particular game, the crowd brought it. I was lucky to sit in the six-man show and Jonathan, Luke and Kevin, you know, arranged that event absolutely superbly, and it was loud. I lost my voice, as you can imagine, as did a lot of people around me. And from what I gather, it was almost like a playoff atmosphere from watching on your televisions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can confirm that or not. I haven't watched it back as yet.
You can hear chants early in that game, which is...
You can hear it, but no, it weren't playoff atmosphere, mate. Not for me.
No. Oh, I don't know. Seriously, when we were there, it was electric. So I will pick up on the game, because the first quarter, we came out okay. And in fairness, Markel started filling the stat sheet up, and I'm going to back him here because everyone's giving him a lot of grief. And then obviously he got yanked and it went south from there. We lost the game. Okay. You know, second, third, fourth quarter wasn't good. Lost the game. But then obviously the whole Shaq thing, having him in the building, you know, was electric. Everybody was on, you know, excited for the jersey ceremony. It was the first time the Magic did it. So they got a few things wrong. It took about 25 minutes to half an hour after the game. So there was a lot of waiting around, you know, seeing what was going to happen. They obviously brought the big chair out for Shaq, brought out all of his teammates one by one. So it did take a long time. I think we did get out about 11:30. You know, and bearing in mind the game finished at what, I want to say maybe about 9:45, 10 o'clock. It was a long time for a ceremony. You know, you see other teams do it in the halftime break, etc. There was a little bit too much talking. I'm just quickly getting through the negativities now. There was a bit too much talking. A lot of, you know, what was said by David Steele and, you know, who else was on there? Dan DeVos came on and Alex Martins. It was almost like they didn't compare their notes and they just said a lot of, you know, exactly the same, which they didn't need to. Other than that, though, it was nice to see all the ex-players there. Penny Hardaway got an absolutely amazing ovation, which was good to hear. Shaq himself, you know, very gracious in receiving it. And that was felt throughout the arena. And I've never been the biggest Shaq fan, as you may know, but he was gracious. He was, you know, complimentary of the Magic. He did say something that you might have just heard from me on the pod, in that Nick Anderson should have been the first guy. But it was good to get the gang back together. You know, Dennis Scott, Penny, Nick. It's a shame Horace Grant couldn't be there. There's a shout out to Jeff Turner, Coach Brian Hill, the organization, John Gabriel, everybody, you know, in the back room during his time in Orlando. So great ovation. And it was a nice event. I know we'll probably get onto another part of it shortly, so I won't steal somebody's thunder in terms of the actual banner. But all in all, it was a great, you know, ceremony to be at and part of, and, you know, one that's going to go down in Magic history.
Yeah. Shaq was your favourite player, Gary. So I'm sure, especially growing up, probably means a little bit more to you, maybe to see Shaq's jersey retired than some of us. But yeah, he was before our time. What did it mean to you? What did you think of the whole ceremony?
Firstly, I don't know why there was thumbs down popping up on the screen when G was talking there.
I wasn't touching it.
Man, I don't know what was going on. I was just looking at my screen. I was going, why is that appearing? Like, what's going on here? So I've got no idea. Sorry about that. But
that's okay.
What does it mean to me? Look, for me, Shaq was the only choice to be the first person to go in. And it's not that I don't want to see the likes of Nick Anderson having their jerseys retired, because I think they are worthy, totally worthy, and they've brought loads to the Magic organization. And I really loved seeing what Shaq did when he brought Nick Anderson up and went, you know, like basically tipped his hat to Nick and then brought up the other guys afterwards. Being a Magic fan, when Shaq was with the team, it's hard to describe because you're in a different era. You're in like almost like a pre-internet era. But when you see now where you've got everything with Lakers gear and Celtics gear and stuff, and if you go into a sports store, that's what's hanging up. That was Magic gear. Like, if you look at sometimes at like the jersey sellers on like, sometimes they put up catalogs where it's like stateside and stuff and what they were selling, you would have usually prominently choices. We've got all these jerseys in: Bulls jersey, Magic jersey, Hornets jersey. That would be your three teams that you would see getting pushed. And to put, there was a scene in the video clip of Shaq where they took it back to the 90s, where like, oh, basically Magic fever was the most it's ever been. And it was showing you like signs up on the iPhone, things that, I think it was the iPhone around town, which were talking about the Magic. And you couldn't go anywhere in like 94, 95, et cetera, without seeing Magic jerseys in shops. It wasn't uncommon to be driving down the freeway and seeing like a sign about the Magic, seeing that, you know, like people talking about the Magic in stores in a way that really just disappeared. It really did disappear when we had the Hennigan era, where it was even difficult just to get a Magic jersey somewhere. Imagine that is the opposite. And that was due to Shaq. You know, you would be walking around like what is now Premium Outlets, and you'd have sports stores, and they would have up at the, I can still see it now, the white, blue, black jerseys across the windows facing out O'Neill, Hardaway. You might have Grant and you might have Anderson. You're less likely to see a 3D jersey. No offense to Dennis Scott, but those were the four in that order that you would see them. If you asked somebody who wasn't a basketball fan in the 90s to name a famous basketball player, the answer you were going to get was either Michael Jordan or Shaq.
I wasn't a basketball fan. I'm the perfect example of that. Shaq would have been the first name I came out with.
Yeah.
Perfect example of it, mate.
It's unreal, mate. And to have like, I was, you know, 12 years old when I got my Shaq jersey, but I was more a teenager when I was becoming more aware of like what was going on. As a teenager, it was crazy to see this just, you know, superhuman looking man who would just dunk on anyone or anything and then be going out there and doing like kung fu moves after he'd done a dunk, or pulling the backboard down, or, you know, like coming out with a rap album, coming out with crazy slogans, pulling faces into the car. And you're looking and you're going, this guy's like just completely fun. He's charismatic. He's turning up on wrestling events. He's got a computer game out there. And he was just everything. And I'll say it again, if we did not have Shaq, we would have been the Charlotte Hornets in this country now. We, despite the tourist industry, we would have been the Hornets. If we've had the second pick and had Alonzo Mourning, we would not have been the franchise that we are.
We wouldn't have had Penny Hardaway.
No, we wouldn't. And it all goes along, mate. And I just think, whatever you think of Shaq, whether people like him or don't, and I still stand by that I think the reason why he's been negative at times to the Magic is he was hurt by the way things have been. I genuinely think when he was up there getting that jersey retirement, I think it meant something to him. I think when he said, oh, this was the one that meant a lot to me, which he has said, this was, you know, this meant more than the others. I believe him. I think Shaq, if you'd asked Shaq 3 years in,
his dream in the NBA, I don't think it would have been to play for the LA Lakers. I think it would have been the man to put the first banner in the ceiling for Orlando, because he's going to be the first at doing it. And I think him being back in Orlando, I hope, is the beginning of better relations going forward. He's talking about he wants to own us. You know, he's kicking around in Orlando at a night time. He ran into Neil.
Yes, I was going to come on to that story in a second.
So just regale us, G. You know, like you said, the photograph across, that's mint. That's class.
Yeah, yeah. So
was he nice?
Yeah, so what happened was, it was the Monday, so the night before. So Neil and I had hired a car. We went to watch the Orlando Solar Bears. Watched the Solar Bears play at Kia Center. They won 3-2, happy days. So we decided get back to our drive. And this was, I don't know, half 10, 11 o'clock, something like that. By the time we got out of the Geico garage. And he dropped me off because our hotels were about a mile and a half out. And he decided to go for an ice cream. Neil likes an ice cream. He went for an ice cream literally every day or every other day. It was a bit of a running joke. After that, he decided he needed a bottle of water. So we went to, he put it into his little sat-nav or Google, Walgreens. Look, he knew there was one on one part of our drive, but it said there was one nearer. So it was literally just behind where he was. So out he goes. Goes into to Walgreens, gets his bottle of water, standing at the checkout. There's a bit of a commotion. Something's going on. And he turns around, and behind him at the checkout, Shaquille O'Neal and his wife. And Neil was like, you know, nice to meet you. Any chance for a photo? But Shaq turns around to him and says, only if I can cut in line. So Neil obviously let him cut in line. He had his photo, and off he went into the sunset. So he messaged me at the photo, and I was like, oh my God. So, you know, 45 minutes. Obviously, I wouldn't have gone for an ice cream being a diabetic, but I wish I had. but he did refer to, you know, on that Tuesday, it was all we.
Yes.
You know, Orlando was a we. He went to see the team in the morning, and then on the broadcast whilst he was on the court at the ceremony, etc. And that was nice to hear. And I think he obviously signed off and said, you know, let me know when you need me to quit my job with TNT sort of thing, and I'll be back. And you know, be a good one to have in your corner. A lot of people want to play for Mr. O'Neal. So watch this space, hopefully.
Yeah. It's immense.
When we saw that picture come through, it must have been, I think my alarm went off at 5 and I was half asleep. I just went, oh, there's a load of messages. So I opened them up and I just went, no. Went in, woke Becky up. I was like, you'll never guess what just happened, and showed her the picture of Neil and Shaq together. And I was like, G missed out. And she goes, G doesn't like Shaq though, does she? Does he? I was like, no, and that's what makes it even funnier. Oh, bless you. But no, good times though. Paul, the jersey retirement wasn't that important for you because there was something else that happened the same night that you missed out on. Do you want to tell us about that?
Right. As everybody knows, I'm a huge rock fan, and one of the bands I really do like is a band called Shinedown. Their lead singer, a guy called Brent Smith, sang the national anthem at the start of that game. What a voice that bloke has. That, regardless of whatever happened on that night, would have been my highlight. That was a superb performance. And I cannot believe that I wasn't there. I was absolutely gutted. And I was even more gutted that sort of Sabrina being there didn't get me an autograph or anything like that. Outrageous. The good thing is that had we been there, I think Heather would now be banned from the Kia Centre, my daughter, because she absolutely adores the man. I have seen her run across the O2 floor at Wembley, in London, knocking people out of the way to get to just grab his shoulder as he came into the crowd at one gig, and she absolutely barreled people out of the way. Came wandering back very giddy because she'd managed to touch him.
But when you messaged that the next day, you said, oh my God, I can't believe you saw Brent Smith. I hadn't got a clue who he was, mate. I won't lie. Mate. I won't lie. He had a cracking voice, though. Cracking voice, in fairness.
That would have been That would have been my highlight of the night.
Oh, mate, Mark Cal was the highlight. Cal.
Well, we'll have to beg to differ on that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's fine.
Hey, I'd have been made up to meet Mark Cal. Don't get me wrong. Brilliant. And I'm so pleased for you that they did that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, I will come back to that's why, that's the sort of thing why we love this team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they do go out of the way to acknowledge fans. Superb. But God, I'd have been made up at the opportunity of meeting Brent. Christ. I'd have been going all out for that. Yeah. But yes, go on, mate. Ask me about the ceremony then.
Go on, then. What did you think? I haven't asked the other boys yet. What did you think about the banner as well?
I thought overall the ceremony was well put together, perhaps overlong, like G said. I can certainly appreciate that. But God, that banner. I hate it. I hate that chosen font. Now, this is coming from a guy with OCD. And I understand that the reason that they've done it is so that there is continuity across the banners when they retire other jerseys and the like. Don't want it. I want to see a proper looking number 32, whichever jersey you're considering is the most iconic one to Shaq. I want the numericals to be that jersey. I don't care that it doesn't match up with whatever jersey has gone before or whatever else is on a banner. I want that jersey to be the jersey, not some change of font so as it looks even across the roof of the banner, across the roof of the arena. No. So the one thing I will say that the Magic have had a lot of criticism about, and it is unfair if you're not aware of the circumstances, and this is regarding those free jerseys that they were handing out. I know that those jerseys were ordered at the time of the event, and they didn't arrive in the arena from the supplier until the day of the game and very close to the game. So whatever they were originally planning on doing, be it putting it out on seats or handing it out to fans as they were arriving, they could not do because they physically didn't have the jerseys in the arena. So some of the criticism that the Magic got for that event is unfair to the Magic themselves. Mm. It was down to a supplier error.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to get one but a lot of fans did miss out because I think some fans who'd left early were taking multiples from what I gathered.
Should have been better managed. That's
yes, it should.
Yeah.
It should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It should. But as you said, G, they could shorten the ceremony. There didn't need to be so much talk. I think everybody wanted to hear what the players had to say about Shaq and hear Shaq speak as well. But it was still a really good ceremony. You guys know my feelings on the banner. I did my edit and put it on Twitter. Everybody saw what it should look like. Ditch the dates. Don't need those on there. We'll see if the Magic actually respond because people are still going on about it now and it's been, a week or so. But anyway.
Not popular with fans, is it? Let's be honest.
No.
And surely if you're doing it, you know full well, I still prefer the idea of the Hall of Fame, the Magic Hall of Fame, to a jersey retirement. I prefer that idea. I think the Magic Hall of Fame is a far better thing than retiring a jersey number. I'm not sure on what the criteria is for retiring a jersey. I understand the Hall of Fame, but far better.
Okay.
It looks better, the Hall of Fame, when the jersey... It would look better if the jersey hadn't been ordered off DHgate. that's kind of what it looks like.
It really does. It really
just
does.
Just like a knockoff.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they'll fix the banner. That's the plan. But last thing, one word answer. Who should be the next Magic player to have their jersey retired?
Anderson, as Shaq said.
Go on, Gary.
Penny.
Mikey.
McGrady.
You're going to break a tiebreaker here, Paul.
I'm not, because I'm going to call me.
You're going to go 40, aren't you?
No, I'm going to say None. I don't think they should be doing them.
That's fair.
Okay.
I don't think they should be doing them. I prefer the Hall of Fame. I know it's not a one-word answer. Sorry, Mikey.
It's all right.
None is a one-word answer. None. You're good.
None.
Or nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody. Okay. Okay, right. Moving on to the last section of the pod, the final stretch. So the Magic have put themselves in a really nice spot with 27 games remaining. They've won 7 out of the last 10 leading up to All-Star break, which actually has kind of come at the wrong time when you think about, well, we were playing and getting results. At 30 and 25, the Magic are tied for 7th with the Miami Heat, who own the season series, unfortunately. But we are just half a game back of Indiana in 6th. 2.5 games back of Philadelphia in 5th, and 3 games back of New York in 4th, who we own the season series over, if we can close that gap. But Gary, before the season began, I think we would have taken this position, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It would take a lot now for us to be finished below 8th, I think.
We're not finishing below 8th, yeah.
But it would take a lot. It would take like a real bad injury thing, which, you know, could happen with us. But it would take a lot. And I think going into the season, we would have all been delighted to finish 8th or above. And that's over 2 seasons. That is significant progress, because it suggests we'll have a record of 500.
Mm-hmm.
So it's yes. The short answer is yes. If you're still on one word answer themes, yes.
Paul, I don't know. You haven't had a huge amount of time to look at this. I don't know your thoughts are.
I apologise in advance, because right. I've been at work all day, back to back days at work, and then throwing in a funeral that I've literally just walked in from to do the pod. So I've not really had much time, but yeah, go on, I'll do it on the fly, mate.
That's all right. No, we'll do it. So looking at the teams we're competing with, so Miami, Indiana, Philadelphia, and New York, how do you think their schedules really stack up? Do you want me to give you some stats?
No, it's all good. No? It's all good. First thing I've brought up is on Tankathon, the schedule side of things, and we're listed as having the easiest remaining schedule. I would have preferred to see Miami a little bit further up that list. I'm not going to lie. They're down as having the 4th easiest schedule remaining. Interestingly, Philadelphia are top end.
Mm-hmm.
They have what is classed as the 9th most difficult remaining schedule. I also brought up their schedule, and it's not wrong. They have 4 back-to-backs. They have 17 of their remaining 26 games against teams that currently hold a playoff position or are very, very close. In fact, no, I'll discount them. No, they're not. There is 17 of their remaining games are against teams that currently hold a playoff position, of which 9 are against Eastern Conference teams in that position. 15 games away from home, of which 7 are Western Conference. The only one, as I'm just looking now, the only one of the top teams that they don't have to face is the Timberwolves. They have the Knicks, they have the Cavs, they have the Bucks, they have the Celtics, they have the Knicks, they have OKC, they have the Clippers. They have some really difficult games and quite a few. They've also got the LA trip, Phoenix, both LA teams and Sacramento. And the LA Clippers to the Sacramento Kings is on a back-to-back. So they've got a tough schedule. the other team that I think...
and what makes it worse is they've got who could have been MVP this year, out injured for a period of time, and they've only won 3 of the last 10 games.
The one that I think is interesting, the Knicks. Good God, you would not want their schedule. I'm surprised that theirs is considered an easier schedule than that of the Sixers. They have to play, consider, I know that they're outside of the playoffs yet, but they have to play the Bulls 3 times, who are going to be trying. They are going to be trying.
And have been playing better as well.
Yeah. They also have to play the Philadelphia 76ers 3 times. They've got Golden State to play twice. I know that they're probably not doing anything, but they've also got the Brooklyn Nets twice. So, but local pride, I think it's a bit like whenever we play Miami. It's one of them games that can go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in that they've got the Boston Celtics twice as well. Let's have a look. They only have 3 back-to-backs, and one of those is home. One of those is home to road, but they're only travelling to Chicago. And the other one is from Boston back to New York to play the Nets. So they're not the worst back-to-backs that they've got, but they play 9 games against Eastern Conference rivals for playoffs, and 14 teams. 14 of those remaining 27 games are against playoff position teams. So I think when you look at the schedules, that ourselves and the Heat are in quite a decent position. Looking at the Pacers, games against playoff teams out of 25. So over half their schedule is against playoff position teams. The thing that they have very little opportunity to do is take games from the rivals of the East, in the Eastern Conference. They play us, they play Cleveland, they play Miami, play Cleveland twice. That's the only 4 games they've got against Eastern Conference teams in the playoff positions.
Mm-hmm.
Rest of them are Western Conference teams. They have 17 games against Western Conference teams, of which, 12 games against Western Conference teams, of which 7 are on the road. And they have 3 back-to-backs. I think theirs is quite a difficult schedule as well. They don't have Boston, they don't have Milwaukee, but other than that, they've got all the top teams.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I genuinely think that we and Miami are in a decent position. Miami's, apart from their 5 back-to-backs, other than that, theirs isn't too bad. They've got some opportunity.
Yeah. As I said at the outset, we're set up nicely when you can look at these other teams.
The other thing that Miami have got is, just looking down here now, they've got 6 games against Eastern Conference rivals. So if they could take wins there against those, they've got Philadelphia in Philly. They've got Cleveland in Cleveland. Play New York at home. Then they play the Philadelphia 76ers at home. And then they have a road game in Indiana. They have an opportunity to affect their own position by taking wins in some of these games. But they've got quite a few 7 away games against Western Conference teams, 13 Western Conference games in total. So they've got I think theirs is quite well set up because they don't have anybody like Boston, Milwaukee, or the Timberwolves.
Mm.
But they've got OKC.
Yeah, well, interesting. G, our last 27 games, what's standing out for you in the Magic schedule?
Well, I think first you need to look at our record, 30-25. We haven't been in this good a position for, since 2010, 2011 or 2011-12. So first and foremost, you've got to commend the team and applaud the effort to get to this point, especially given the daunting January we just had, which is, been against a lot of playoff caliber teams from last season. So reason I'm confident is we have 15 home games from the remaining 27. So just take those 15, add that, just say we win all the 15 home games and lose the road. That puts us at 45. So if you think back, what was our predictions before the beginning of the season? I think I was the highest at 43 wins.
Yeah,
I think we were up, I think about 41, 42 for most of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So given the fact that we've got a lot of games, so looking at it, you know, you've got Detroit, you've got Atlanta, Detroit twice, you've got Charlotte a couple of times, you've got Washington in there, you've got a couple at Toronto, Charlotte again. Okay, there's a couple of difficult ones there, LA Clippers, Golden State Warriors, Memphis Grizzlies, and Charlotte again, Chicago, at Houston. And then the three tough teams that we do, as I say, the two tough teams are what could be. Milwaukee, we've got twice in the last three games, and we've got Philadelphia the game before last. Seedings might be settled already there, so there might be a chance to, you know, get Milwaukee on a night where they give Giannis or Dame the night off, for example. But you've also got an eight-game homestand right in the middle of that, which gives you a real opportunity to shoot up the standings. And those games, after a roadie in Toronto, you've got Toronto at home, Charlotte at home, Pelicans at home, Kings at home, Warriors at home, Clippers, Memphis, Portland. You know, if you can get at least six of those, you know, you're climbing. So if you just added 15 wins as a bare minimum from the 27, you go 15 and 12 the rest of the way. 45 wins isn't too bad, and it's a great jump from last season. You're absolutely going to be in the play-in, if not the sixth seed. So you want to see at least 15 wins, if not more, just to give us the best opportunity. We've done the hard work. We've gone through the tougher teams a little bit earlier on in the schedule. As Paul mentioned, the strength of schedule, it's in our favour at the moment. So, you know, you just want to kick on. We've got a full, healthy roster now, something we haven't had for a lot of the season and in years gone by. So it's a real good opportunity to push on. And I don't know if you saw the advert for the playoffs during the All-Star game, with Jalen Suggs in it, just amping the crowd up in Orlando. So, you know, they consider us a playoff team.
Just yeah. Read some of the away games out, Genji.
So on the road, we start obviously at Cleveland, at Detroit, obviously winnable, at Atlanta, at Charlotte, at Washington, at New York, at Toronto again, scrolling down, at New Orleans, at Charlotte, at Houston, at Milwaukee, and at Philadelphia. So there's a lot of winnable road games in there too.
So seven of those 12 road games are against teams under 500.
500, yeah.
And considering that we're only 12 and 17 on the road this season, we're all expecting us to do well at home. We've got a lot of home games. Yeah. We've got that eight-game homestand. I think we're all expecting us to continue that trend of doing well at home.
Yeah.
But there's also some good winnable road games there that you can improve that record as well. So I think 15 to 18 wins we're looking at personally for those last 27 games.
So that'll be 18 and 9. So 2 and 3. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible, isn't it?
With three games against Charlotte, two games against Detroit, one remaining game against Washington, one against Portland, two against the Raptors, who we know we've not been 100% brilliant against them for quite a while.
Bulls at home.
And the Grizzlies.
Portland at home. Grizzlies at home.
There are some winnable games there. We've got... Yep. The other thing, I've just sat here looking at this. It's nice to see. We don't appear as anybody's toughest in the list of toughest games on remaining schedules. But we also do not appear once in anybody's remaining weakest side of the schedules. So that's accomplished volumes. Yeah, we are no longer considered a pushover of a team by tankathon and the like when it comes to strength of schedule. We do not appear in anybody's weakness in the on the weakest, easiest opponent side. Be nice to get into that toughest opponents. So.
It would. It would indeed. So just quickly then, how do you see the standing shaking out for the playoffs and playing? Go on, Paul. I'll let you go first.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, get in there.
I genuinely believe we could move up to six. I don't think we will. Somehow I think we might just miss out and end up with that seventh seed. I can see... There's always somebody drops away, isn't there? And I can see, with their injury issues, potentially New York being one that, being that team. Boston aren't changing where they are. Do Milwaukee move back into second? It's possible. Or did Cleveland hold on to it? Cleveland are playing some nice basketball, aren't they, at the minute? Milwaukee just haven't got gelled under Doc Rivers yet. What have we got at the moment? So we've got Boston at top, Cleveland second, Milwaukee third. I can see New York dropping, and I can see Philadelphia dropping. And I think by the time you've done, it's a toss of a coin between ourselves, Philadelphia, New York, Indiana, and Miami. I think you're going to see it could be tiebreakers could be involved between all five of us. I think it's going to be that close. Mm-hmm.
Gary?
A lot of what Paul said is kind of on the same page as me. I think that Cleveland are obviously an informed team and they've looked actually legit, shall we say, heading into the All-Star break. I think the Doc Rivers appointment wasn't the best appointment that could have been made. I think I said it in the summer. I think Milwaukee dropped the ball when they didn't hire Nick Nurse as their coach. Yep. I think that's coming home to roost now, and I think it could have ramifications for what happens with Milwaukee going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if Milwaukee were the third seed this season, given how it's all shaken out.
Yep.
I think if absolutely everything goes our way, 46 wins is attainable for the Magic. I think if things don't go our way, 41 wins is like the floor. So I think we'll be somewhere in that bracket. It's how bad injuries are in New York and how long Joel Embiid is going to be out for Philadelphia that's going to dictate a lot of whether on, and basically how well we handle our schedule with our own injuries and how, who we're playing. We could get sixth and we could have Milwaukee in round one. And I'll be honest with you, that matchup doesn't terrify me as much as it should if we have Jonathan Isaac. That does not terrify me as much as it should, because I think Milwaukee, yes, they've got Dame there, but they can be got at on the perimeter. And if they want to play a game inside, we are a team who are happy to oblige with that. So I think we match up fairly well with the Bucks. And if you offered me 3v6 now, Orlando or Milwaukee, I would take that series, because I wouldn't want to play Cleveland in the first round. I certainly wouldn't want to play Boston. I don't think we've done well against Miami. I think Indiana are the team that really are going to be a problem here, because I think whereas we were quite evenly matched talent-wise with them, I think the Siakam trade got them significantly better. And I think if New York get healthy, they got significantly better as well. And I just hope that's not where it comes home to roost. But I think if Embiid's injury is bad, I don't want it to be, but if it is bad, Philly could slip. They're in firing line now, and the same with the Knicks. So if we can get into the sixth seed, I would be absolutely delighted. And I would, give me the contract now, I would take a first-round series with Milwaukee. Not saying we win it, but I think we'd be competitive.
Gee, I think you were the only one out of the four of us that said we'd finish sixth at the start of the season. Am I right?
Spot on. And I'll stick with that. I can see us finishing six. A lot of what the guys said, I can see Philly dropping. I can't see New York dropping. I think they've got a lot of good players. Obviously, they've got a few injuries, but seeing them up close, they're a big team. Jalen Brunson's very, very good. I just want to see the dirty, stinking Heat drop. If they drop, and we can hang around with Indiana. Philly drop, we move into sixth. And as you know, Gary said, you know, I wouldn't fear Milwaukee. And to be honest, any of them, you know, Jonathan, we got Jonathan Isaac, you know, so he can lock somebody down. And we've got a lot of talent on our team. You know, you don't get to the situation where we're at without talent. And we've come on leaps and bounds in the last 12 months. So long may it continue. Yeah, but I'll go with six. How about you, mate?
I think we should sneak in. I really do. I had us seven. I don't know if you remember. I had us finishing seventh and Miami eighth in preseason. And I said we'd play them in the play-in game. And I still think that's pretty likely. As we said earlier, I don't think we're going to drop any further than eighth. I think we're going to get two bites at the cherry trying to get into the playoffs at the bare minimum. I just think that heavy home schedule and a favorable road schedule as well. I could see us leapfrogging Indiana and Philadelphia. I think the top four are a lock. New York solidified their top four spot with the moves they made at the trade deadline, getting Alec Burks and Bogdanovich. I think New York fully healthy are a problem for anybody in the East. Yep. I really do.
I agree.
That includes Cleveland and that includes Boston. I don't think any of them would want to play New York in a 7-game series. Philly and Indiana, they're the two with the targets on the back for me. So if we can get six, then I think we'd all take it as we are right now. So are we all going six? Are we all going to go?
It's close. I'm not as confident that we're getting six, but it's close.
My asterisk is injuries.
Don't say it.
Sorry. It's the Orlando Magic.
Yeah. We'll see.
Just looking at New York's, you're not getting Mitchell Robinson back because he's done for the season. Embiid, 1st of February. Sorry, Embiid, listen to me. Julius Randle, 1st of February. They said he would be re-evaluated in 2 to 3 weeks. So that 3 weeks is up now. That's re-evaluating.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily being back. That's just re-evaluating. They need him back. Aren't signed on DiVincenzo, Bogdanovich are all day to day, so you expect them back soon. And then OG,
underwent a couple of weeks for him. He had a loose bone, I think, in his
he had elbow surgery, mate. 8th of February, and was expected to miss at least 3 weeks. So you expect that 3 weeks is not up until the following week. We've got another week of that, and it's expected to miss at least 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. He's a big miss for them.
Philly feels like the team, if you're going to catch, they feel like the obvious choice at the moment.
And don't forget, New York have lost four straight.
Yeah.
They have lost four straight. Yep. They certainly have. Right. I think that's going to do it, chaps. Thank you for listening and watching. Before we go, we just want to say a big thank you to our patrons who help support the show. So thank you for your incredible support to Barry Conn, Paolo and Franz Warmth, Ollie Law, Gary Clark, Angus Craig, Dylan Holden, Alan Kane, Tom Sohn, Mark Joss, Sean Moore, Liam Radbourne, Andy Lindley, Stuart Benzies, and Drum Drum Drummy Drum Drum. If you're interested in joining our Patreon, we've got three tiers available with varying benefits. Visit patreon.com/letstalkmagic to join today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give it a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube. Leave us your thoughts and questions, and we may even read some out on an upcoming episode. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and X @_letstalkmagic. So from Geraint, Paul, and myself, sorry, and Gary. Geraint, Paul, and myself. Until next week, go Magic.